And so today is March 11th. Gosh, time's flying. So today's March 11th, and this is the meeting for the Guam Cancer Trust Fund Council. And we're going to go ahead and get started. And just a quick introduction of the council members. So besides myself, we also have Kathy Castro and Ken Leon Guerrero, Dr. Awadi, Yvette Paulino, oh, there's Margaret, and Mr. Peter Scrow. And so we, because this is a GovGuam council, we are required with the open government law that all the council members have to keep their video camera on. So, we're kind of not, I'm still asking for guidance here from my fellow members if the guests also have to have their camera on. What did we decide?
We decided yes.
Yes,
okay. For full transparency.
Okay, yeah. So I need to ask everybody to turn your cameras on. And so, yeah, thank you so much. Appreciate it. And Peter, I think Peter must have stepped away.
I'm here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if you can, you need to turn on your camera too. All right, so we have guest members. We have Mr. Jim Espaldon, we have Carlos Titano, we have Renee Wexler, we have some other members from GMH. If you'd like to introduce yourself really quickly.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Debbie Olito here at
Oregon Memorial
Hospital.
Hi, Debbie. Welcome.
And I have here Ms. Tricia Shimizu alongside me with me.
Okay, great. Welcome. Thank you. We also have Natasha Chaffers from the Speaker Terlahi's office and Ellie from Guam Cancer Care and Marisha Artero. And then we also have Bremelin Yamanaka, who's the program manager. I thank you for bearing with us. We want to do a little bit different, change the order, and I believe we sent out the agenda. We're going to change the agenda from normal. We're going to do the new business first because the one item on the agenda is the review of the GMHA application. So we want to go ahead and review that first so that our guests can speak, and then if they need to leave the meeting, then they're welcome to do that. So I'm going to share my screen, and let me see here. There we go. And basically, can everybody see this?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So I apologize. I tend to put a lot of notes for myself as we go along so everybody can kind of see where we're going. Okay, so first up with the new business is the review of the GMHA new application for FY 2021. So just to kind of give you a background, the original request was for $1 million, and that $1 million was divvied up $500,000 for a C-arm imaging scanner, $360,000 for a laboratory information system, $25,000 for medications for cancer control, $75,000 for local oncologist partnership services, $20,000 for patient education materials, and $20,000 for inflationary costs. And these were explained in the application. So when we met as a council, we had some concerns. We sent a response letter from the council member to GMH. We informed them that both the requests for the 500,000 C-arm imaging scanner and the $360,000 request for the lab information system, they were unallowed costs per the GovGuam Cancer the rules and regulations, because we are not allowed by law to fund equipment, medical equipment, and these types of things. So we had to disallow that. But for the other items, we did request additional information regarding the medications, the $25,000 for medications. We asked if they could provide justification, you know, what exactly was it for? How were they going to be dispensed to whom, by whom? For the local oncologist partnership services, we asked to specify who the local oncologists were, and you know, kind of just give more explanation for that. For the patient family training education materials, again, we just wanted a more thorough synopsis, just to, you know, more thorough explanation for the funding. And then inflationary costs, we don't do inflationary costs, but we did say that you could say something, you could put that under an admin fee, and we just needed them to clarify that. So on March 4th, GMHA submitted a response, and their revised request was for $140,000. And so we did send out, as soon as that came in, we did send that full GMHA response to all the council members, and hopefully you've had a chance to review. So sorry for my long synopsis, but that's basically in a nutshell what it is. So at this time, I would like to allow council members, how would you like to proceed? Would you like to allow, would you like to ask some questions of some of the GMH members that are present?
As for me, I've read over the response, and I actually don't have any questions because I'm somewhat familiar with the two items with respect to the medication and with respect to the local oncologist partnership. So at least for me, and as far as my position, I'm okay with funding those two particular items. I think they definitely are consistent with our purpose, and we're not violating any laws by providing them the funds for those purposes.
Okay, so I'm sorry, this is for the medications and the local oncologists?
Yes, the local oncology partnership. I believe it's with TARE.
So these two, got it. And anybody else have any other members have any other issues with these two medications?
I don't. I believe we should add the patient education materials to the approved list as well.
Okay. How about you, Kathy?
In the response, they had spoken about upgrading their Wi-Fi system at the hospital with regards to having it made available to the cancer patients. And they had spoken about how it was utilized during this pandemic time and how it assisted patients from being connected. However, the Guam Cancer Trust Fund is by law can only provide funding to nonprofit organizations that provide, or the hospital, that provide direct services to patients. And how would Guam Memorial Hospital be able to justify that the Wi-Fi system, once upgraded, is only available to cancer patients and not to hospital-wide? Because once you upgrade your Wi-Fi system, it's open to all that's there, staff and all other patients. And I bring this up because I do know that when we had another application from another organization that was providing respite care, we had to go back to have them justify that the respite care they were providing was specific to only cancer patients and not all patients. And part of their grant application noted that they were going to hire additional staffing. And we had to have them justify that the additional staff they were hiring was not to be utilized to any other patients, whether they be cardiovascular patients, aged patients, hospice patients, but only specific cancer patients. So in keeping in line with what the law that created the Cancer Trust Fund and funds the money, can they justify to us how they plan to do this or explain to us?
Hi, good afternoon. I totally understand about the specific only for the cancer patients. It probably will be hard because we would have to upgrade the whole system for the whole hospital first. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I guess focus on two floors that will be housing cancer patients. But like you said, if somebody was to like vacate that room and they put somebody else in that room, that person will have access to the Wi-Fi. So it'll be very difficult. We just thought that we could just see if we can use that for whoever is on those two floors, but I can see it being difficult to separate cancer.
I bring that up because it was an issue that was identified during the audit report by the public auditor that we needed to follow the law that specifically said direct services to cancer patients, and okay. It did not allow for any others. I wanted to make sure that you understood that specific part of the law. I would love to be able to provide that because I know exactly how important it was, especially during the pandemic where iPads were given to the patients and the patients were able to have access to their families.
Yes.
And how important that was for their mental and psychological health. However, mm-hmm. we're so restricted with what the law says and how we can utilize the funds. And we were questioned about it already by the public auditor in the past. So we want to make sure we don't go down that road again.
The other option, just kind of thinking out loud here, is that you could put the cost of the Wi-Fi, you could use your admin fee, your admin costs that you're allowed to charge the 15% to pay for Wi-Fi, you know, whether it's routers or whatever, because there is no stipulation in the rules and regs on how you use that. You can use that for your facility. It's just that you wouldn't be able to use it from the portion, your patient education materials part of the grant. And I don't know if you already had something else in mind for your admin fee, but that is an option.
I actually like that option.
Okay.
I'm wondering, this is Eda. I'm wondering if they kept it where it's at, if it would still be appropriate, if they could estimate like what proportion of their patients are cancer patients, mm-hmm. and provide some measure of how much of the Wi-Fi is used, and then only request that amount from the cancer trust fund. So let's say it usually costs, I don't know, $100,000, but only 20% of that is usage by cancer patients. I'm wondering if that's within line and appropriate.
But will that 20% be consistent throughout on a daily basis?
Right. I think it would just depend on our our census of cancer patients in-house at any given time.
Correct.
Right. So you'll get an average of the year, right? Because you're never going to get the exact, but if you average it out of the year and you know what proportion of your patients
would that be acceptable to the law and to the public auditor? The utilization of the funds?
That's my question. I'm thinking it would be, just because, again, it really comes down to providing the service to cancer patients. So that's kind of a metric that I'm wondering could be used, but I don't know for sure.
Is that something that
can be posed to the senators, that question?
I know Natasha's here. Maybe Natasha can take that back to the speaker and she can bring us back an information. And maybe Rachel, you can also clarify that with the public auditor. I know that the legislature has a legal office, so they can pose that question too.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm thinking, I feel a little uncomfortable with that idea because it's not a direct service and it's not.
I hate denying things, but I also know that when we don't follow the rules, we get penalized by having the funding cut.
Yeah. Right.
And but that's really not where I want to go.
It sounds like though this is part of education, training and education. Is that separate? Are we considering that direct service or was that the education and outreach component?
Well, this is what they had allocated. So that's actually a good question. You know, in your response for the patient family cancer care prevention training and education programs and materials, you allocated $20,000, but it looks like, so is that really the only thing you're going to do for the patient education materials is really just going to be focused on the Wi-Fi coverage? Because that's really all.
No, it wasn't focused just on the Wi-Fi services. We were also taking a look at providing materials to the cancer patients and their family members, and also providing getting up to date training for our cancer care teams with regards to providing services, the treatments that they receive.
Okay, Peter, you had your hand raised. You wanted to say something.
Yeah, I think that a way that we can really measure as far as the use of the Wi-Fi is instead of looking at guessing a percentage of usage, why don't we fund, for example, the purchase of a certain number of iPads that are specifically and only can be used by cancer patients and held by GMH so that when the cancer patients are there, they simply get an iPad. That would be consistent with our purpose. And I feel that would easily pass scrutiny by an audit.
Yeah, I actually would feel more comfortable with something like that.
Is that something, you know, I guess maybe it's just a matter of style, but this doesn't seem very complicated to me. And I'd hate to have to go and get, you know, 10 opinions for something while we have cancer patients that need access to information. Is this something that we can just decide on now?
Yes, I believe so. Yeah.
Wouldn't it require Guam Memorial to modify their requirement for education materials to include that? Then it becomes a straight pass through.
Yeah.
Education materials. And instead of printed forms, we give them an electronic support.
And then they can document in their resubmission exactly how they intend to control this iPad to ensure it's only going to cancer patients, what their method of control will be.
Yeah.
Why don't we do a conditional approval based on that?
I'm fine with that. How's everybody?
Sorry, I'm not, because I'd like to see how they plan to do this first before I even give a conditional.
Okay.
So they would need to resubmit it.
I would have to agree with Kathy because I have seen way too many conditional approvals on things diverted to something else. Perfect example, government and Guam budgets, they fully fund vacant positions and the departments use that money that's set aside for payroll to pay for trips and buy new vehicles. So I would have to agree with Kathy.
Okay, so then sounds like what we'll do is we'll ask GMHA to go back, revise your request, especially that the education part, and just explain how you're going to use that funding for iPads or Chrome tablets or whatever, and then how you're going to control usage for cancer patients or cancer program. And then if you can resubmit that, that would be good. And then we'll if we can get it done in the next soon so that we can approve it and look it over at the next meeting, that would be good. So go ahead, Yvette.
Sorry, just to clarify, so that for that portion, they're replacing the Wi-Fi with actual devices. So no funds for the Wi-Fi, correct?
Correct. And if they want to use their admin fee portion for the Wi-Fi, they can do that. That's up to them how they want to use their admin fee.
Correct.
Great.
Go ahead.
Are we able to, at least for today, take a vote on providing them an award for the medication for cancer control and the local oncologist partnership?
I believe this is one application.
Yeah, it's one application. We'll have to wait for them to. We can't do a contract for this and then another contract. That'll take too long. So we like to just do one contract.
Yeah, usually it's one contract per entity.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. All right. And I apologize. I see that Renee.
Rachel.
Yes.
If GMA also intends to utilize these iPads, if that's how the route they wish to go for not only cancer patients, but for staff that are working with the cancer patients, they can identify that too.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, any questions from the GMHA staff who are attending before we move on?
Not at this moment, but we'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to review our application. We will certainly work on providing the additional information based on this meeting to the committee at our soonest.
Okay. May I request that if they're able to get us the information within a week, maybe we can call a special meeting so we can move forward in granting it. We don't need to wait till the next month's meeting.
Yes.
So as soon as they can get it to us, let's call a special meeting just to address GMH. I'd like to get them funded as soon as possible. And you know, once all the information is in and everything is in order, we can act on it.
Yeah.
I would recommend we use the same thing we did on the rules work, just recess this meeting and call us back. That way we don't have to do the publication and the notice and incur that expense. This way you could send us an email. We got everything we need. How does 2:00 this afternoon look to reconvene? And we can
and move forward.
Okay, yeah. So the sooner that you can get it submitted to us, the better, and we'll be able to act on it. Okay, yeah, great. Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you for attending. That really helped. We're trying to do new things and make things easier so we can speed things up along the way.
We want to get you your money.
Yes. Okay, great. So
thank you so much.
Yes, you're welcome. So yeah, we'll move on to a report from the chair. I'll make this really quick. The financial report just came out for February 28th, but it's not posted yet on the website. It will be posted very soon. So total in cash in the account for Guam Cancer Trust Fund is $2,846,189. Of that, $2.601,284 is allocated, is already encumbered and allocated towards the various projects. So basically, the amount that's unallocated and available, for example, for GMHA, once they get their application, is $244,904. So this money here, the 244, again, this is what is not allocated towards any of the projects. So if it's not used, it will roll over into 2022 to be added for distribution next fiscal year. So just as a reminder, the applications that were awarded For this fiscal year, we awarded $831,221. We awarded Catholic Social Services $313,409, American Cancer Society $127,890, E.M. Calvo $345,000, Santa Teresita $27,734, and UOG Glee $132,000. And of course, we still have two others that came from FY 2020, and Remlin will go over that. And also just as a reminder, oh, I kind of already said this, at the end of FY 2020, we had $315,000 that was unobligated or unallocated. We carried this over and used it in FY 2021 and added it to the funding we got from the Guam legislature. And remember, we only got $1 million for FY 2021. And of that, remember, we can only use like 75% of it because the rest goes towards the investment savings, which we still haven't figured out, and our UOG's 5% admin. So we had $1,065,152 that we could distribute, and we distributed $831,000. And again, we now have $244,904 available to distribute or roll over to FY 2022. And that's my report. Any questions?
No.
Okay. All right. I'll move on to Remlin so she can report.
Hello. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Hi. Okay. Well, as of March 10, 2021, the remaining balance for the following contracts. So we have American Cancer Society, Azuda Foundation, Edward M. Calvo, Guam Cancer Care, Direct Services, and Guam Cancer Care Education and Outreach. So you can see the blue graph, that's how much they were awarded. And the red graph is what they spent. So their balance is the one in the green graph. So if you can see for Azuda, their balance, their award money and balance still stays the same because they haven't submitted invoices. I know I spoke with Jim Espaldon the other day. He's gathering his documents so he can proceed with giving the invoices. And anyways, with Azuda, they have a no-cost extension that's approved till December 31. Same with Guam Cancer Care. If you can see on the graph, Guam Cancer Care Education and Outreach, it's still the same because they haven't submitted any invoices yet for that contract. And then for FY20 contracts, the American Cancer Society and Edward M. Calvo, they ended their contract on January 31, 2021. And now they're starting with their new contract starting the contract for 2021. And the rest, the ones that we just approved for Santa Teresita and Glee, they start on March 1st. Any questions?
No.
Thank you.
I know that Jim Espaldon is in this meeting, and although he hasn't submitted any invoices yet, but I was just curious, Jim, would you be able to let us know, have you been able to give out some airline tickets to patients? I know that part of the challenge was the lockdown and the availability of flights and everything, but are cancer patients availing of this service now?
Thank you for asking. Yeah, no, thank you. It was a difficult year because the way the program runs under the Azuda Foundation, the program is called Wings for Life, the Cancer Assistance Program. And in essence, those cancer patients whose insurance companies do not pay for airfare for off-island treatment, but do pay for their treatment off-island, those are the patients that we covered. In 2020, I think we sent out, I'm going to have to say about 26, 27, or we buy about 27, 28 patients and their escorts. And these were the more serious cases that have no treatment on island. There's some very severe cases, some very rare cancers that we're coming across right now. 2021 seems, and during 2020, we did get a lot of inquiries about the program, but a lot of the patients were a little hesitant to go to travel. First of all, there were enough patients who were looking to travel to the Philippines because their support network is stronger over there and the cost of treatment and whatnot is much lower. I have a waiting list basically of patients who are looking at March, April, May to start flying out. In fact, I'm noticing that this month in particular is getting very heavy. But yes, the answer to your question is yes, we were able to send out, I think we purchased about, and I was just working on that, roughly 28 tickets. And most of them, I think with the exception of four, were to the States. Some, and depending upon where they're, first of all, the appropriate treatment facility is at, that's where we send them. And the other consideration for some of these patients in terms of where they will be seeking treatment is their support network in their locales. So even though the majority go to LA, whether it's Good Samaritan Hospital or the other hospital, there are some there who are opting for Seattle. And Texas and Seattle are the exceptions to LA. Hawaii has been closed. So they, you know, those who were actually initially interested in going to Hawaii at the time, were channeled and were channeled to LA. But to answer your question briefly, yes, we were able to provide tickets, airline tickets, round trip tickets for the patients. We did lose one patient, just to let you know. Sorry to say.
To hear that. Has anyone requested to travel to Taiwan now that we've had that agreement with their, with the visa and their consul office?
The answer is no. Although I might add the caveat to that, I do push it because I know that there's some excellent treatment out there. I've heard from some friends who have been treated for cancer in Taiwan that the service was incredible. I mean, as soon as they landed at the airport, they're met by somebody at the airport. They're taken full care of and whatnot. There's a lot of hesitancy for Taiwan. I think one is they're afraid of the language barrier. Second of all, there's no support network, and most of them, if not all of them, really don't know anything about Taiwan. So, you know, I do put it out there that Taiwan has excellent service and it's only a few hours away. And so, you know, even if they have to return, because we're finding that some of the patients definitely have to go back for a follow-up treatment or a second surgery, that might be a better option. But as of today, nobody has opted for Taiwan just yet.
I'm just curious. I know their Ministry of Health Department has sent out a press release. I don't know if you've seen that, but on the requirements for patients going into Taiwan, what is needed to be done locally and what kind of information. So I was just curious whether someone has availed of that. My other question is, when a patient goes off and you provide
airline tickets. Can I just say something before you go on?
Sure.
I'm sorry. The on that, I think this is where perhaps maybe a little more education, and I don't know who it would come from, of what's available in terms of off-island care. Because when I spoke to the medical referral office over at the governor's office, they were also trying to push the Taiwan services. But again, there's not a lot of people who know about it. And I'm not sure if it should be the doctors who should be made more aware of the services over there, because a lot of the doctors, at least the referrals, one of the requirements, of course, is on our end, is that there is a medical referral from the physician, and the physician usually, and also the insurance companies have to chime in on this when they apply
maybe,
with us.
Maybe work with the Guam Cancer Coalition and getting the message out or something.
Perhaps so, because it would, to me, that would be a more sensible approach if it's so close and there's excellent care according to the people who have been treated there. So the Cancer Coalition is probably a great idea to figure out how we can get the word out a little bit more, especially to the physicians. I think I remember only one cancer patient who actually said that their physician recommended Taiwan. But again, their concern was just their unfamiliarity with Taiwan and the culture, and just the apprehension that it's a totally different language they're getting into. And, you know, of course, I tell them, hey, they're perfect. They speak English very well. But again, there's just that discomfort at this point.
Understood.
You know, I think with that, I can help with one thing. The China University Medical Hospital and Medical School is an excellent facility, and they have a tremendous cancer program. I know some of the people there that are in the CEO's office. I can send them an email today and just have them send us a bunch of information. And why don't I start first giving it out to within our council, and then
actually our council, the GCTF is not involved in that, Pete, but the Cancer Coalition can do that, and the Guam Medical Society and Medical Association probably would be the best.
I'll get it out to them.
Yeah. Thank you.
Jim, I have another question, Jim. This is just based on the discussion that's taking place, but sure. Have you, Do you have a way of asking the cancer patients who avail of the services about their experience? Are you documenting that somewhere and perhaps using that to sort of compile a
about their experience of the treatment that they received?
Where they go? And which places are they more likely to go depending on which cancer, what site, and what their experiences are, so that information can then be documented and shared with any new patients that come to your office? I'm wondering if there's a way to put that together so you have something to go off when you're offering them.
The direct answer to your question is no, I have not documented it, although we do, we know when a patient does come back, we do communicate with each other just to find out how are they doing, where are they at now, are they in remission, was the treatment taken care of. Everybody seems very satisfied. I haven't written it down or documented, but I do document exactly where they go to, which facility they go to, and in what city they go to. But so far, nobody has come back with any negative feedback. They're just happy that they were able to get the treatment that they got because it wasn't available on island.
That's important to document, because when you submit your final report to the council here, it shows that just the mere fact that they were able to have access to their treatment off island, because part of the biggest challenge is getting to the facility. And because of your organization, that happened quickly. That's important, at least for your final report too.
We do compile where they're going and what exact facility, but what we have not necessarily documented was their experience over there. Like, in other words, but in our conversations, everybody seems very pleased with what they've have had access to in terms of the facilities and the treatment that they've gotten.
I think even something very short so that you can capture their satisfaction, and you can, especially going to places like Taiwan, if their experience is exceptional, that's definitely something that
it would be a good testament.
Yes,
absolutely. And excuse me, also to the legislature, when we're planning for additional funds.
And I don't, that's not usually captured. Patient satisfaction is not something that's often captured. I mean, it's discussed, but I don't see anything written about it. And that's, I think for a cancer patient care, we're talking about their experience and their quality of life. I think that's a huge part of it. So just a suggestion.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think really the main issues for a lot of these patients is not so much the care that they receive, right, at the various facilities, but it's the hardships if they don't have a good support network wherever they're going, right, in terms of the lodging, in terms of the expenses and whatnot. And just to add on to that, right now, I do have some requests from patients who are presently in the States, and we did not pay for their tickets. They didn't know about us, and they actually went there way ahead of when we were able to provide them any assistance. But some of them are still there and are asking for assistance to come back. And I said, sure, you know, I mean, I just need certain documents and whatnot to be able to assist them. But yeah, the big thing for them is, I mean, and they're just lucky that most of the time they do have family in the region or in the area that they fall back on. But like I said, I do get requests for patients who have paid their own way or have gotten there somehow, and now they need to come back. They purchased a one-way ticket. And so, but yeah, aside, I mean, that's beside the point. I appreciate your suggestion in terms of the patient satisfaction. And we'll start capturing that as well.
I think we need to be careful. Capturing satisfaction is one thing, but I don't think we should be using customer satisfaction ratings to encourage patients to go here or there, because that puts us in the position of, well, you know, I went to Taiwan because they told me to go to Taiwan and they were going to pay for me to go to Taiwan, and they took off the wrong leg or something like that. I'm just concerned about collecting customer satisfaction is one thing. I think we need to be careful using council funds, pushing a destination over another destination, because by the time they come to us, I think they have an idea where they want to go, or their doctors have recommended some place for them to go, and for us to step in the loop and say, oh no, why don't you go to Taiwan? It's cheaper, it's closer. They speak English. I think that's assuming a role we weren't given by the legislature. Just my two cents.
Oh, just for clarification, I don't mean to use that information to sway them one way or another, but it's just to provide information, and that would be across all the different sites, is to just have the information available if they had asked, but not necessarily to convince them to go to any particular place. So I hope
that's okay. Well, that's clarifying.
I kind of agree with Ken in terms of we have to be careful. And that's why I say and usually it is the docs in conversation with their patients who make recommendations. Like I said, especially since we're seeing certain kinds of the cancers that are kind of rare. And so the doctor kind of gears them towards certain centers, facilities and centers. That being said, I think this is where Kathy mentioned, maybe something like the Cancer Coalition could help, or even what Mr. Skrull, what Peter said, was, you know, the Taiwanese facilities probably have to put a little more push behind it, behind their facility. And then it becomes a lot more recognizable, not just for the patients, but for the doctors as well.
Jim, I have a question. When you purchase the ticket, I'm assuming it's a round trip ticket for a patient. However, some patients happen to go to the treatment facility or the hospital, and once care and treatment begins, sometimes the return flight has to be moved because they have to stay a little longer. And because of that, there is a change fee. Does your organization cover that too?
Well, we're just lucky because so far when COVID hit, of course, we're using United for the most part. And then, like I said, a couple to the Philippines with Philippine Airlines. But United has been, United has basically waived that change fee for now. And so, yeah, and I'm not sure how long that's going to last. However, if they do reinstitute it, our approach was that that cost would have to be borne by the patient if they need to change it. And that one's a very difficult call because even just, you know, after their treatment and their operation or whatever, like you said, there might be a need for an extension of time. And it's hard to really determine that at the front end, right? So when we book a round trip ticket, we kind of give the best estimates. I ask them to ask their facility that they're going to, what might be
the length of time.
Appropriate amount of time. Would it, yeah, four weeks, 6 weeks and whatnot. And we kind of book it on that. So, but right now, there is a waiver of the fee to change the schedule.
I only pose that question because it's one thing for a patient to change their return date because of medical care, but sometimes a patient, because their near family want to stay a little longer, but has nothing to do with their care, and I was just curious how you dealt with that, because if it's an extension for medical care, I understand that, and I'm not sure what your rules and regulations are, but if it's for personal reasons, then, you know, that should be borne by the patient themselves.
Right, and that's going to be tough to determine.
Correct.
Just because, first of all, most patients want to come back as soon as they can. But that being said, that would be hard to determine at that point. Like I said, we're just fortunate right now that there's been a waiver of the fees, right, for changing any of the schedules. How long that lasts, I'm not really sure. But our approach, if it does get, if the fees are re-implemented for changing of their itinerary, then our approach has been that the patient would need to cover it.
I think this is a moot conversation because when I was in the training business, I did a training for America West Airlines, and their policy was waiving fees, medical emergency, military emergency, and death. They waive fees. That was their policy. And I imagine that most airlines have a similar policy in those three instances. But, you know, it's nice to talk about it because Jim brought up a very interesting point about some people wanting to stay for family reasons.
As Kathy brought it up, but I can see that too.
Yeah.
But even that, sometimes that is where they feel they recover better.
Yeah.
Because if they need to go back, in fact, somebody did mention that if just in case during their recovery, I mean, even though they've been released from the hospital, to come home right away and then to find out that they'd have to go back just because something happens along the way, they would rather stay in the neighborhood if they do have a support network out there, just in case, and then, you know, fly out a week or two later than right after their release from the facility.
Okay, sorry, we need to move on. But thank you very much, Jim, for being here to be able to answer questions. But yeah, we need to move on.
Glad to be here.
Okay, so old business, the only thing we have for old business, but which is a huge, huge, huge topic, and we won't be able to get through everything today, but we can get started, is the revised rules and regulations for the Guam Cancer Trust Fund. And just as a recap, especially for our newer members, we had our public hearing on September 15th, 2020, and we had written testimony and written an oral testimony from Ellie from Guam Cancer Care, Renata Bordalho. And then 3 weeks later, Senator Luis Munoz's office submitted written testimony, and I also met with them at their office. And so basically, if you add up the, if you look at the testimony that was submitted, there's really five areas of concern that were brought up. The first one has to do with the how we, there is a cap. If you look on item 7, section B4, it says an applicant or grant or that an applicant who has used Guam Cancer Trust Fund is as its sole and only funding source. So basically, we had said that we were going to put a cap on how much of the funding could be used for salary and fringe. And I think I got the wrong thing. So the concern is that it really, it basically penalizes organizations that only have Guam Cancer Trust Fund as a funding source. That was one concern. And then there was also the concern that we also put a cap on, so that was for direct services. There was also a second concern that we put a cap on how much of the funds can be for salary and fringe for the education component. And we put a cap of 35%. Kind of the same thing. Some of the comments with regards to that was that it forces organizations to shift funds to non-personnel related expenditures when actually there might be needs of the patients that need the services provided by people like patient navigators. One comment was that this is an impossible scenario in the healthcare organization model because based on the definitions of administrative expenses, the remaining 50% can only be spent on medicine and supplies, and no viable healthcare organization works with those constraints. So these were two of the concerns. Salaries, there was some other thing. Somebody said that one of our provisions was illegal, saying when we, a current listing of the applicants, board members, directors, employees that identifies any of them as who are full or part-time employees of GovGuam or any GovGuam corporation, autonomous agency or instrumentality. So we put a provision in there that we didn't want, but we needed everybody to identify themselves, especially if they were GovGuam employees. And someone from the senator's office said that this rule is illegal because GovGuam employees are allowed to hold part-time employment. And they went on. But actually, well, our attorney said that it was okay for us to put that provision in. Anyways, we're running out of time. And so I just kind of want to maybe state what the main concerns are so that when we have our next meeting, we can discuss these things because we do have to address them. Either we revise our rules and regs or we have to come up with justifications on why we're not going to change it based on the provided testimony. We're almost at 5 o'clock, so we really don't have time to discuss it, but I outlined what these were and I put it, we'll have it in the minutes so that you can review it. We'll send it out, we'll make sure we send out the comments again to all the members so that we can discuss it next time. But before we close, any comments with regard to this?
Just one. I mean, it's not illegal. We're not banning them on the basis of their employment. We're just asking that everybody be identified.
Yeah.
That's totally different than banning people based on their employment with Government of Guam.
Yeah, I agree. If it's okay with you at our next meeting, it would be we probably well, should. Remember,
we're going to recess this meeting so that we can deal with Guam Memorial Health.
Yeah.
And if we get this out to everybody, maybe we can kill two birds with one stone when we reconvene.
It's just that Senator Munoz, the testimony that came from Senator Munoz's office, I mean, there were 22 pages worth of comments. Many of them were, you know, kind of grammatical things like, oh, he's changed the wording of this. They were not really substantive changes, but some of them, you know, like this thing about, you know, this is illegal and this part is illegal. I don't agree with it because we actually had our attorney read through it very carefully and he, you know, he would never have allowed us to put anything illegal, but I think it's going to take us some time to go through and address all of these things. So,
Rachel, may I ask, did our attorney have a chance to look at the comments that were provided?
No, we didn't have him look at the comments, and we could. I could ask him if he can go through and look at them again.
At least the parts that reference the legality of what was in our proposed changes.
Yeah, I'll send him certain sections and ask him, you know, can you just give us your opinion on these things?
Keep it focused on just the legal issues. The caps and stuff, this fund was never meant to be a sole source provider.
Correct.
You know.
Yeah, I think what we need to do too is we really need to get engagement from the Senator Terlahi, because, you know, Senator Munoz is no longer a senator anymore. And really the opinion that matters the most is Senator Therese Terlahi, since she's the chair of the health committee. And we really need to engage her. And you know, we've been through the legal rounds, and I will send it again to Anthony Camacho, our legal counsel here at UOG, to make sure, have him read through it and give his opinion. But then we really need to engage with Senator Terlahi and get her take on it too. But I think it's gonna, I was really hoping that we could get through it, but it's, you know, like I said, 22 pages. And again, some of them are non-substantive, but there's a lot, just a lot to go through.
Okay.
Yeah. So anything else before we close? Any information, any announcements or questions? Okay. All right, well, it's 4:58. I really appreciate everybody hanging in there, and we will adjourn the meeting until we meet again.
Oh, recess the meeting.
Recess the meeting until we get our documents from GMHA, and then we'll meet again real quickly to finalize
that. At which time we will reconvene.
Yes, we will reconvene. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone, for your attendance.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.